We don't have any time to waste. Sorry.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, James Jones, and it is February 9th, 2017, and I am joined today by Mr. Guillaume Vaillette.
Coming to you live from the frozen tundra of Montreal.
Yeah, you guys are getting stuck in the blizzard too, huh?
No, we avoided it, but it's cold as hell.
We had a, in Fahrenheit terms, 35 degree drop between yesterday and today. Oh, that was fun. That's the kind of cold drop that even makes your cars go, what the fuck is happening right now? I'm also joined today from the frozen tundra that is Southern California by Mr. John Lindemann.
James, it's a pleasure to be here today.
I guess it's more Central California, isn't it?
No, it's still SoCal.
Okay.
It's closer to LA.
How's it awful there? Is it like 70?
No, actually, it hasn't. It's been pretty cold this winter. Cold being, you know, highs in the 60s probably, but it's been rainy, very rainy, which is
weird. So people are actually like not laughing at you for wearing socks and your flip-flops?
I mean, typically in the morning, I usually see my breath, so it's fairly chilly. Mm. It's like 44, 45 usually in the morning.
Pray for John Lindemann.
Yep, pray for me.
Last but not, but definitely not least, I'm joined by Mr. Greg Leahy.
I'll get around to that after I finish praying for Schwartzy's ratings on The Celebrity Apprentice. That's got to take priority.
Everyone. As the only U.S. citizen, do not bait me into bringing up something that we don't want to talk about. Don't.
Yeah. You brought up prayer, and it's just synonymous with that, apparently.
Oh, I'll see you in court, Greg.
You will.
Good Lord.
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, on the bright side, we're one step closer to John getting kicked out of the country, so.
No comment. Who and knows who we might were be listening?
And we thought that we were rid of him. God damn it.
I hope he's listening. That would be not the least surprising thing today. So you know what? Go for it. If you're listening, please write in. And we'll definitely read your email on the show.
I guess this is what I get for taking a week off, huh?
No, this would have happened regardless.
Pretty much.
Anyway, it is episode, I don't know, what is this, 409?
Yep, 409, 5.
509?
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, you know what, Guillaume said, yeah.
409 is a formula, buddy.
So it is 409.
I was paying attention to the last digit. And, yeah.
It's 409 part 2.
You failed in ways I never even imagined.
Really? Yeah. Because that's not the first time that's happened.
It really isn't.
If it's not in front of me, it doesn't exist. I don't have object permanence. So, to do business. And speaking of things that lack permanence, I'm going first with Fire Emblem Heroes. See, that was a segue. And it was a deep cutting commentary on the state of mobile games. I shouldn't have explained it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, have you played mobile games before? Guess what? This is a mobile game. I'd imagine pretty much everybody listening to this show has picked up Fire Emblem Heroes at this point because it's free, and mm-hmm. you can.
But what do you mean by it's a mobile game, James? It sounds like that's a kind of a loaded statement coming from you.
No, this is a Japanese mobile game.
Is it a mobile-ass mobile game, though?
Yeah, totally. Yes, I mean, it implies.
It is. Its rear end is independently mobile, yes. It's like the thing.
So basically, you've got, you know, some core gameplay mechanics. So like for Puzz Draw, it's, you know, the actual match 3. For this, it's sort of a really simplified Fire Emblem gameplay. Wrapped around a series of timers and gems and other collectible doodads that let you do stuff. So for this game, it is a very small grid. I think it's 9x9. Usually with some junk in it to kind of deny you maneuverability, and a small number of units. You've got 4. I think the enemies can max out at 6. And essentially, it's Fire Emblem combat. You know, you take turns going back and forth, moving your units against one another. They fight for the prescribed number of hits based on their stats. So maybe they hit one time, maybe they hit twice. They take turns hitting one another, and then at the end, either one goes down or they both survive. And eventually you just do that until the enemies are wiped out. What this game doesn't have is an ending, for one. It just stops at chapter 9 in the middle of the story. It doesn't really have much of a challenge unless you want to go to the... Even the hard mode, and I think the other one's called lunatic mode, is really just a matter of what level you have to be. So, you know, a stage that the recommended level is like 17. In hard, it's like 25, and lunatic, it's like 38. Which is really hard to accomplish because you don't gain a ton of experience in the higher levels. But basically, you collect... You get gemstones for clearing stages or for giving Nintendo your money. And you trade gemstones for draws on the random generator where you get heroes, which you can then use in your party. Heroes are characters from Fire Emblem Past, and they have star ratings of 1 to 5, although really it looks like it's 2 to 5, and pretty much everybody's a 3. And you're not useful unless you're a 4 or above. And you can upgrade them for 20,000 feathers, but you get like 5 feathers at a time. So good luck with that. Nintendo did just give out 10,000 feathers, which still doesn't let me upgrade anyone, which tells you how useful feathers are. But what you're looking to do is you're looking to build a party of 4 and 5 star characters of red, green, and blue, you know, the standard Fire Emblem colors, that are useful in dealing with whatever kind of scenario of 3 to 6 enemies you're going to encounter who are similarly red, green, blue, and then these non-coloreds, and you fight. The problem is that on the random draw, you don't get to pick red, green, or blue, or non-color. You get 5, and those are pre-selected, and you can pick from those 5, but if there's no greens, you're not going to get any greens. It just is what it is. So you would do your first drawing, because you have to pay up front for the first one, and then just quit, and then start over again. As you keep drawing, the price goes down. So I think to completely get all 5, it's like 28 gems. You get 1 gem per stage you clear the first time. You get 2 gems a day. So when you first play the game, you have tons of gems and you get lots of heroes. But towards the end, gems are kind of loose. And, well, you can give money and you can get more gems and get more characters. But really, this is a mobile game. It's all about waiting for your energy to refill and for buying things to get more draws in the gacha component. Like, what makes a Japanese mobile game? Wait, lots of waiting, a basic gameplay hook with all the waiting and gems and crap wrapped around it, a gacha component, which, if you're not familiar with the term, is literally just random drawings. It's like gachapon, where you put the coin in and spit it and you get an egg that has a random prize in it. And that's really the game. Like, this is the most mobile game style, or in the Japanese style, Nintendo's put out of their mobile games thus far. And it's, you know, it could be seen as whale hunting. It's relatively generous with gems, at least in the early phases. But right now, the biggest challenge is there's only 1 5-star green character. And there's multiple 5-star reds. There's quite a few, actually, and a decent number of 5-star blues. So I've got like 4 5-star reds, which are great. 5-stars are great. I've not even got a 4-star green because there's so few greens, and everybody seems to have this complaint, that the greens just kind of suck. And so you end up really imbalanced, and yeah, I mean, the game's fine. It plays well enough. It's enjoyable enough. The story's kind of dumb crossover stuff, but, you know, not unpleasant. The music's nice, but that's because the music is just lifted from other Fire Emblem games. There's a handful of original compositions. The original art for these characters are interesting. It's drawn in all kinds of different styles. So you've got stuff drawn in this like late 80s, early 90s of the style, where it's like that. It kind of looks like the Final Fantasy 2 and 3 art, you know, really hyper detailed character drawings that don't have any discernible trace of anime. All the way up to like these weird cell shaded renditions of some characters.
Yeah, I saw, the guy from the Norse side of Fates.
Yes.
He's basically the Tick, his character. I'm blanking on his name.
Yes.
But yeah, he was drawn in a comic book style, which made sense given his, you know, sort of superhero-obsessed persona.
Yeah, so I actually have him. He and Arthur, by the way. He and Nino are my only even remotely decent green characters. And the problem is that Nino's a magic user. I already have a 5-star Tharja magic user, and magic users can only attack from 2 spaces away, which means when the battle gets close and at 9 versus 9, they can get close very fast, or a 9x9 grid. Having someone of each color who can sort of hold ground and use the barriers built into the stage to kind of trap somebody or keep somebody from advancing is a really useful skill. So you don't want to have too many ranged users on your team. So I basically can't use Nino, because if I did, I'd have to take the much better Tharja out, which means I basically only get to use Arthur and his crazy cel-shaded. And he's only a 3-star, because all I can get are 3-stars in green, except for Nino, who's a 4, and I can't use her. It's fucked. So the 4 characters is super restrictive. And I think the idea was that you would have a lot of characters you could bring into any battle, and the game gives you some hints as to what you're going to be dealing with, so you kind of shuffle and match. But it's not like Fire Emblem in general, where you get to see the start of the battle and pick your characters and position them. The game places them randomly. I think the stage is not randomly generated. If you could actually see the stage and put the characters you want where you want them and pick them at the time, that would be a tremendous game changer. Because a lot of times what I find is, because characters can only move 2 spaces, which is really restrictive, the characters are just not on the right side of the formation. You know, I see there's a bunch of blue characters coming from my left, and I want Arthur over there to basically just get in their way. Because of the weapon triangle, they can't really hurt Arthur that much. They might do like 2 or 3 damage, and he's going to do 10.
Yeah.
So I'm more than happy of just putting him there and letting him absorb. And then I can sort of deal with everything else and then turn my units that won't be as effective against them to just kind of do cleanup duty. But because I don't have any control over where they start, I don't get to actually do that. So I spend a lot of times either trying to bait the enemy by putting somebody right in their range and letting them come after them, or just turns where they're not, the enemy's going to wait for me, and I just have to reshuffle everybody around, and that's not very much fun. That 5-star Tharja basically rocks the face of any ranged user except for blues, which she's weak against. So a lot of the game has just turned into me baiting them to attack her over and over again. So she's massively overleveled at this point, because she just gets to steal kills constantly. There is some stuff beyond the story mode. There's like a challenge, which is basically like, clear this stage, or clear this stage with an archer in your party, and stuff like that. Sorry. There is a...
Did the timer go off? Like, can you improve a character or something?
No. That was... Actually, you know what? I do have an alert from 9:30, though, of Fire Emblem Heroes telling me that my stamina has restored because I waited long enough and I could play again.
Excellent.
Oh, man.
It's not super restrictive on how long it takes to refill, all things considered. I zeroed out my stamina around 6, so around 9:30 it was completely refilled, and it's constantly refilling. It's giving you like a little bit every 5 or so minutes. And I get about, depending on what I'm playing, I can get between 20 and 7 minutes before I drop the timer again. Because these stages can be cleared in you know, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. And the higher level, the really high difficulty, I can't remember what it's called. I just said it a little while ago.
Lunatic.
The lunatic difficulty, like those can be like 16 of your 50 stamina per level. Whereas the regular ones could be like 5. The training, I think, is still under a special like post-launch window where it's like 3. It's nothing. And then there's these special ones that pop up every day where you get a chance to fight for a specific character. But they're always like 2 or 3-star versions of that character, so I don't... That means they're effectively useless.
Well, they're just trying to get you to... pay to upgrade. Is that
well, one? So I don't know that you can even buy feathers. Like, I haven't seen.
Oh, can you not buy feathers? Okay.
Not that I've seen. You get feathers by having friends, and the friends show up every day and, like, they give you some feathers. Sometimes members of your party will give you feathers. Sometimes some of the challenges have feathers as a reward. And then they did this thing where one of their tweet got 1,000 retweets, they gave out 10,000 feathers. Which, like I said, isn't enough to upgrade Arthur to be useful. Because if I could make him a 4-star, he'd be great. But like I said, everybody gets two movement except for the armor, like the knights. So there's the armored knight Effie from Nor, who is a 4-star blue, but I can't use her because she only can move one space. And these battles are over so fast that she's not particularly useful unless my entire strategy revolves around her. And because I can't place her, I can't put her where she'll be most effective right away. So it's kind of a pain. It would be nice if I could just say, like, he goes here. She goes here, and I don't have to move her that much. She'd be much more useful, and I would be using her in my main party as opposed to a 3-star blue, which I'm using right now. Flying units can't travel any further. They can just go over some obstacles. So if there's, like, water or stuff, they can fly over it. They can't fly over walls, obviously. Like I said, I don't know. The game is fine. The missions can be enjoyable enough. Some of them are decently challenging, but they're not hard. I've not lost except for when I accidentally brought a party I was training into a level 30 mission when they were level 7s. It didn't go well. But you know, the gacha element really is a pain in the ass. Because if you can't get one of the two good greens that are currently in the game, a 4-star Hector or a 5-star Camilla, like, you have no good greens. And that really is a hindrance to what the game is trying to do, because there's plenty of good blues out there that you have to face without somebody to face them. So I would have liked to have seen them fix the balance there. I would like to see that, you know, maybe there's less, you get less 3-stars. I've got a ton of 3-stars that are useless. If you get two of the same, you can combine them and you get SP to transfer. SP is not moves, it's what you accumulate for winning engagements. So like, I fought somebody and beat them, I got 3 SP, I leveled up, I got, you know, that's part of the random level ups, I get like 25, and then you trade those to add on skills to these characters. You know, I would, maybe if you could merge two and it would go up 1-star as opposed to just raising them by 1 level. I get why they want to do feathers, but I haven't spent any money on it. I don't think I will. I think launching the game without the end of the story, I know why they're doing it. They want to have an update layer. It's like, come on back and play. The rest of the story's here.
Yeah, exactly. I was surprised at actually how much you had to download right off the bat, because...
Oh my God, it's brutal.
So first off, I couldn't connect. And I mean, this was right after launch. So okay, they have launch problems. That wasn't really too unexpected. But then I figured, okay, well, it just has to like contact the server to pull down something small. Right. But then it starts to download something like a 323 megabyte file.
Yeah. And then it does another one after it. It's like 90.
Yeah. And then I think it pulled that down just to show me like an opening movie. And I was like, why did I have to sit here through that big download just to watch that?
Well, I mean, that download, I think, has the game in it.
Okay.
Because the initial download from the store is like 90 meg.
Yeah.
Like it's nothing. And then it's this 300 meg download, then like another 90 meg download.
Yep.
And then I got another one today that was like 2 meg. I've gotten one big patch since then. I think it's just assets. I think it's music and game files and stuff. Like they put a smaller file on. But you know what? I've seen this in other Japanese mobile games. It's like, oh, this isn't that big. I could put it on my phone. And then you go and they're like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, they
it bloats up immediately afterwards.
Yeah, they Trojan horse you.
Yeah. Like I said, the game has things that work, things that are good. But you know, the combat is, I think, did a decent job distilling Fire Emblem. I think the lack of good balance in what's available, because there's way too many reds. Blues have about the right number, just not enough greens. I think that really hurts the game. I think it's crazy how much that hurts the game, because it takes away that element of strategy. I think not being able to set your battle stage at the beginning is disappointing. I think that would give you a completely different game, in a good way. But like, it succeeds at what it's trying to do, I guess.
How much do you think it succeeds as a sort of promo for the IP, because I guess that's like, you know, that is, according to Nintendo, a lot of what they're trying to achieve.
Does it need one? I mean,
the thing about the fact that it's kind of got relatively big is that, you know, that means Nintendo thinks it can get bigger still.
That's true.
So.
Maybe. I guess it's hard to say. I feel like Fire Emblem, though, is is going to be a hard sell, but it's at the same time, it was at the top of both of the major app stores.
Yeah, how's it doing in Japan so far? Do we have any news on that?
We do. Give me 1 second.
It's definitely doing relatively better there, as you might expect, because as James mentioned, it's in that kind of mold of the really popular games in that country. In terms of grossing and downloads, it's kind of better there than it is elsewhere. But it's still charting in other territories.
Apparently, some analytics said it grossed $2.9 million in its first day. The thing about it that I look at is this is, I don't know that it's out in South Korea yet. I know it wasn't originally. That may have been fixed. Like, that's another country where this game would probably do really well, because it kind of goes in the vein of their mobile games as well. I don't see that we have a lot of details yet. We have that first day number. Well, actually, hold on. So apparently Awakening and Birthright went back into the top 20s on the eShop after Heroes came out, but that could just be coincidence.
The bump,
the mobile effect.
I'll be curious if it does move the needle on these. I mean, considering there's lots of fire, there's weirdly lots of Fire Emblem games coming out. Like, we've got one coming out, what, next month?
It's 3 months.
3 months? Yeah. That, we'll see. But that game, Fire Emblem Echoes, blah, 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 blah. Fire Emblem Echoes, far too many words. It was, it was always going to be probably less of a seller than the big Fire Emblem games that have come out.
Yeah, they probably won't give so much of a push for it. It's kind of you would think it's kind of looking at it as a sort of modest risk, modest reward kind of title rather than the way they rolled the carpet out for Fates, the big effort made for that.
And they haven't, I mean, think about the first time we saw a trailer for Fire Emblem Fates. People thought that trailer was SMT Cross Fire Emblem, which also tells you how long ago we first saw a trailer for Fire Emblem Fates. that game came out much later than when we saw it. So it's not super surprising that we this game's coming out much sooner. So they obviously don't seem to expect it's going to be as big. I will say that Mario Run, Nintendo says they've made them about $53 million. 78 million times since launch and $53 million. Like, I would imagine they would take a very small sliver of that and be happy for this game. But I don't know. Like, we don't have a tremendous amount of info.
I mean, of course, like, obviously the actual date is going to be limited, but I was asking more from the point of view of just
as
your judgment as someone who knows the series well, if they're familiar with this style of game, how well does it kind of lead people to kind of get interested in the other. See, I mean, because with Pokemon, obviously, Pokemon Go doesn't have all the components of a Pokemon game. Notably, they still kind of want to add in a lot of those things one day, it still obviously did a fantastic job of getting that brand but up to the top of people's kind of thinking again. But obviously that had a much bigger place in sort of pop culture already. So, I don't know how achievable anything like that is, but
sure. Interestingly enough, I'm reading a summary of Mr. Kimishima's interview with Time, which came out, yesterday, I think. And they put the number at 5 million revenue on Fire Emblem Heroes so far. But I think it does a good job of being kind of Smash Brothers-y for the franchise. Like, look at all of these characters from this franchise. Look at all the different styles of characters that we've had. And I think the combat is very simplified version of Fire Emblem. I think it's decently compelling on its own as a mobile property. It's like I said, it's a minute. It's a few minutes. I've cleared some in sub minute before, but that's really the exception. So from that standpoint, I've had a lot of waiting to do this week, and that's actually been a pretty decent way to do it. It sort of ticks the boxes in that way. I think it's good for the Fire Emblem brand, and there is a distinction of what I am talking about here. Because, of course, the Fire Emblem brand may be more than the game's Fire Emblem underscore, you know, insert title here. And we're already seeing that, you know, with Fire Emblem Heroes.
Warriors.
Warriors. I'm sorry. Heroes is the game we're talking about.
It was bound to happen.
It's too damn confusing.
It's Dragon Quest's fault.
Yes. But, you know, Nintendo does have their media properties brand they're working on. They have their theme park business. Fire Emblem would be a pretty easy shoe-in to make a TV show out of, because there's already a lot of cast characters and they talk, unlike a certain other franchise they have.
shall remain nameless.
But, you know, being at the top of the app stores, both of them, certainly didn't hurt. You know, it certainly is good for brand awareness. And, it, you know, the game, like I said, the game is decent enough. And people who are used to this style of gameplay, where it's just pretty common in the mobile space, would not find this so, I don't want to use the word unpleasant, but you know what I mean, would not find this so unusual.
And presumably user reviews are not going to become mired in people the one-time fee model that was used in Super Mario Run. So yeah,
I don't know, it's I'll be interested to see it's going to be hard to do an apples to apples comparison, because unlike Pokemon Sun and Moon, where we had another Pokemon game we could compare it to, we don't have another what appears to be kind of side story-ish Fire Emblem game to look at. You know, we're looking at comparing this game to other 3DS Fire Emblems is inherently unfair.
Yeah.
So we may not have good metrics on this for a while. But, you know, if they do... If this is part of a larger rollout to make a Fire Emblem brand, then it's probably good for that.
Yeah, I mean, it will expose the brand to a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't see it. I mean, if it's on the front page of the App Store, a lot of people are just going to see, oh, it's a Nintendo game and it's called Fire Emblem. Oh, cool.
Yeah, and because Mario is just about to come out on the Google Play Store, the Google Play Store top banner was Fire Emblem next to Mario, and that's not bad company to be next to.
Yep.
So... yeah, I think it probably is good for the brand, although it's going to be hard to say. I mean, I'm still shocked at what Pokemon Go did for Sun and Moon. And I think that's overblown slightly, because I think Sun and Moon being so nostalgia heavy and doing all these neat new things was going to be more successful anyway than just another Pokemon game.
I think that a lot of the people who did buy it would never have found that out. But I think mostly people who wanted to look at that media blitz were looking at it. I don't think
Pokemon Go was a gateway into that, you know, for a lot of people. Just the fact that it made it in the public consciousness again. But it was also part of a bigger, you know, strategy. Of the whole year was a huge 20-year anniversary celebration of Pokemon. It started
Go ahead.
It started with the Super Bowl commercial. You know, we've got the Switch one this year, but last year it was Pokemon in that spot. And, you know, that, it was just kind of setting the table for, you know, the whole year. So, yeah, I mean, it's not just Go, but you can't separate it out. The huge effect that had.
No, my point was, this probably still would have sold more than the last game. Not least of which because there are more 3DSs in the marketplace, but... I think this was almost inevitable to do better than X and Y, but Pokemon Go contributed to that. There is this thought of like, oh, well, here's the difference. That's the sales difference. Therefore, it's this much. It's part of a larger strategy. And I think that's what Fire Emblem becomes, part of a larger strategy to grow the Fire Emblem brand. And I think we saw that with the idea that they were going to do a whole Fire Emblem-ass Fire Emblem Direct. Like here is a bunch of Fire Emblem voiced by a dude from Fire Emblem selling you Fire Emblem. Like there is the fact they carved out time with their Switch presentation to say, hey, tune in for this Fire Emblem thing later. Here's a tease so you watch it. I think they're revving up that Fire Emblem engine, and they're gonna start working this up. And this is a component of it. There are other things too. That's a lot to say about a game that we've all probably played. But Guillaume,
yes. So I don't have, you know, the hot new games to talk about, unfortunately.
Tell me, what are these hot new games that you're not playing?
I have no idea. I guess, yeah. Dragon Quest VIII, but I'm still mired in Dragon Quest VII. So I just beat the quote-unquote final boss, but I think there's like 40 more hours to go. And I'm not talking about post-game content. I mean, okay, like you beat the baddie, now do the, I don't know, serious tedious chores. We'll see. I haven't started yet, but I'm kind of not looking forward to it. The game has at 60 hours. I'm ready for it to conclude at some point. But anyway, so I'm mired in that, and I don't know. But with Karen, I've started playing Kirby's Return to Dreamland again. That's still a good game, you know, like I talked about Planet Robobot during our top 5 episode, and I think that's probably what inspired me to return to Dreamland. I'm sorry.
To be fair, I mean, you've been on a whole other planet with Planet Robobot, so you know, it was very much a return. You know, it wasn't just in the metaphorical.
But it's backwards. So where was he before Return to Dreamland?
Yeah, I know. It makes more sense now. You know, like going back to it from Robobot.
Saying Robobot's a prequel?
Ooh, I like that theory. Has anyone really spent the time necessary to kind of map out the Kirby timeline?
I'm sure the Sterling content at Game Theorists has handled it.
So I'm playing that, it's still an enjoyable game. There's not that much to say about it, except that it still looks good. You know, it might be SD, and there might have been 2 3DS games that came out after it, but I'm kind of surprised that there seems, maybe it's just in my mind, but there seems to be extra animation in this game that was not in the 3DS games. I don't know why they wouldn't just, like, you know, cut and paste into the new games, but Kirby seems more expressive, and also his buddies, Waddle Dee and Meta Knight and King DDD, because of course the game is co-op, and you can choose to play as 2 Kirbys, but you can also just pick, as I said, Waddle Dee, who has a spear for whatever reason, and Meta Knight, of course, with a sword, and DDD with the giant hammer. So it's kind of weird, because if you've got, you know, if you take a second Kirby, if you play as a second Kirby, you can copy enemy powers, and, you know, so there's no, you know, you're not handicapping yourself, you're not limiting yourself to anything. But then, like, if you choose one of the other characters, it's like, well, I you know, I guess if you don't want to switch out your hammer ever, then yeah, sure, go ahead. Like,
well, but don't forget, you can lose your powers.
Sure.
If you get hit. I'd played a bit of Dreamland, or Kirby's Adventure Wii, as it's called here, with a friend once upon a time. And the thing about him being DDD is when you get a boss, he could just stand in there and beat the crap out of it without losing a power, you know, because if you take a big hit, it comes out in the form of a star and bounces around until it shatters if you don't swallow it again. So there's some utility there, I don't think. But yeah, but probably most of people would just like do it for, they like the character, or, you know, it's more different, it's more personal or something.
Right, yeah. So... yeah, like, I still enjoy it. It's still good. It looks good. It plays well. And the levels are well designed. One thing, at some point, Karen did pick DDD. And so when you're playing co-op in this game, when you get a food item that replenishes your health, if your buddies have lost health as well, you just walk up to them and you share the food.
Yeah, like, mother bird.
Exactly. You just go right up to their faces and you just regurgitate a little bit of food in their mouths. So it's kind of weird, but it's even more weird.
Oh,
you know, like, Kirby, Waddle Dee, and Meta Knight all kind of the same like form factor and size. But Karen was playing as DDD, and I picked up a food item as Kirby, and then I touched DDD, and like Kirby just goes right up there, you know, like just climbs on top of DDD and like is right as his face and just, you know, shares like, come on, have some of my ice cream cone, come on, and just like it's
regurgitating your love, Guillaume, that's what that is.
it's a little bit weird to see, but
I think it's better described with Nintendo's favorite marketing phrase of the day, share the joy. Oh.
That's actually more offensive than a regurgitation reference. I'm just gonna leave this whole section out and just no titles from this section of the episode.
So before we started playing Return to Dreamland, I tried to play Final Fantasy Chronicles Rings of Fate, which was a DS game. And was kind of a co-op Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. Well, they're all co-op except for the Wii one. But yeah, so I had bought two copies from the Square store like a while ago, maybe 1 or 2 years ago when they were on sale. So I got two copies, tried to play with Karen, but this is my first time with any game in that series. So I'm kind of a little bit lost. The game doesn't really explain itself well, especially if you just don't bother with the story with a single player and go straight into multiplayer. It seems like when you're playing multiplayer, you're playing co-op, you do have access to all the areas that you see in the single player. But you lose the townspeople, you lose kind of like the whole context, I think that in the single player, your character has, you know, a story. But when you're playing multiplayer, you choose a character and then you're just thrown in there and you don't have context. You don't know their personal stories. You don't, anyway, it's a little bit disorienting. So there's that. And there's the fact that, I don't know, maybe because the DS couldn't process so many characters on screen, like the shops are unoccupied. And it's kind of funny because you'll read a sign like on the counter and it will say like, oh, well, you know, like, please leave the right amount of money. Like, we trust you. So it's the text is actually kind of funny and cute, but it's just the whole place feels uninhabited. But, you know, like we still enjoyed the game, but we're kind of without the context, it's hard to find the motivation to keep playing, especially when you're just like feeling like trying to figure out exactly what you're supposed to do, and the game just doesn't do a good job of telling you like when we started the game, it told us go to this place, to this castle, so we did, and the only thing that was available at that castle was various missions. So very much kind of minigame like, or kind of challenges like defeat all the enemies in this area in this amount of time, but there was no real exploration to speak of. There was nothing, but so we kept accomplishing missions, and that structure kind of reminded me of Final Fantasy Explorers, which I did not enjoy. And I was like, is that it? Is that all there is to the game? And then eventually we stopped unlocking new missions and figured that okay, like the game never told us this, but then like you back out of the castle and you go through this area, you explore and you reach the end and you beat the boss, and then you unlock a different area and then you unlock different missions at the castle. So I don't know. I guess like this game has, you know, is pretty confusing, and maybe I'll have to sink a little bit of time in the single player before I understand how like even powering up, how buying new equipment works and stuff like that. The game looks all right, but the DS is really long in the tooth. What I find funny is that, you know, the DS games on a 3DS do the same smearing thing that we talked about last episode with Super Metroid and kind of the default image mode. But I find that the DS games, it doesn't bother me as much. You know, I played it first. I played Final Fantasy first on the 3DS, and I was like, well, that looks all right. Kind of, you know, like the, of course, like the textures aren't super pleasing to the eye or anything, but, you know, that's to be expected for a 3D DS game. But then I switched to my DSi, and I could tell that, okay, this is now proper resolution, but it did not look especially better. Maybe if I had played it on the DSi.
It depends what kind of game you got. If it's something like you know, the sort of 2D, you know, Castlevanias on DS, you know, pixel art, that suffers a lot more in on the where it gets sort of stretched like that on the 3DS. Right. I find, you know, that the sharpness of the original resolution benefits a game like that a lot. When you're talking about something that's more of a sort of rough polygonal game, maybe, you know, I guess that's at least what the people that put together the N64 hardware thought. You know, it's better off just smearing the whole thing in Vaseline and don't see the edges.
Yeah, another thing that I find about this game is that I'm not seeing much Final Fantasy in it, which is disappointing. Like, I want to be hit with, like, all the fan service, but other than fighting fans, you know, like, it doesn't really have that Final Fantasy feeling to me. And I don't know. The writing is really good. Like, it does, like, there is at least one character in the game, the King, who gives you the missions, and there's the text has personality, you know, like he's not just giving you missions. Like, there will be, like, the mission might be titled like UFO, and so you talk to him and he'll start telling you about you know, like, it was really weird, like, I went to bed last night and all of a sudden there was a big light, and I'm kind of feeling weird, like as if I was probed or something. But anyway, like, anywho, like, just could you go to the farm and do this? And then you realize that the mission is to jump up and try to save cows that are being abducted by UFOs.
Is there a reason for that whole thing? I'm just thinking of Majora's Mask and all that. Like, what is there a reason why cows are being abducted? Is it like a meme or something?
I guess, crop circle thing, I suppose. Like, it must originate from something.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, like, it does. It does.
Aliens abducting cows and doing experiments on them is one of those, like, one of those just parts of the, or you know, cutting them up or whatever is just one of those UFO myth things. It's just like, it's just in there with that other stuff. So I think they just seized on it because it's kind of it's a relatively benign looking thing. It's a cow being pulled up by a UFO, which is kind of silly because cows are big.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's weird because I recently revisited Space Invaders Get Even, the hit WiiWare game.
And,
that is also a thing. Like, you're playing as the UFO thing in Space Invaders, and you can absolutely kidnap cows, and that replenishes your health. So I guess that's your answer, Greg. Like, UFOs
they
need
something,
them.
It's something that I've seen in a bunch of Japanese games, but I'm just wondering, did it start there, or is it one of those things?
No, it's kind of like the whole Roswell.
They kind of funhouse. Is it one of their sort of Japanese funhouse mirror of American things?
It's exactly that. And because I've seen it in other Japanese cultural things too, where it's like, oh, here's this tiny UFO picking up a cow and struggling to pick it up because cows are big. You know, so, dumb stuff like that.
Speaking of Japanese culture, another fun mission type in Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles is you are literally herding cats. The mission is there are two pens, and there are white and black cats that you have to find. And so you pick them up, and you try to throw them in the pens, and it's impossible because you try to throw them in there within, like, the fences, and they just bounce around. Like, they're uncooperative. So you're literally herding cats, and I'm just wondering, like, okay, like, we don't, in French, we're culturally, like, we're much more closer to the English than the Japanese would be. Like, we don't even have like that expression, herding cats. So did somehow herding cats, like, is that a thing as well? Like, did it grow independently in Japan, or did they just hear the expression in English and they were like, oh, we gotta, that's good, that's good, like, we gotta borrow that? Or like, what, like, did they localize it, or were they something different? Like, and I'm kind of just wondering in general, like, did the mission, like, did this mission come about because they were like, oh yeah, we'll have a mission that's cat herding? Or did someone kind of just mess up the physics and people were complaining, like, I can't put this ball in this basket. Like, this mission is junk. And like, the, I don't know, like, one of the artists was like, hold my beer, I'm going to fix it. And just, you know,
change on the balls. And you're done.
Yeah, exactly. And like, see? Like, don't even have to touch the physics. Now it all makes sense. I don't know. I find that interesting.
A listener wrote in to me specifically saying that I should play that game. Thank you for taking care of that for me, Guillaume.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Like, if I return to that, like, we haven't touched it in a while. But, yeah, I still had some observations about it. It looks good. I mean, it seems like a decent game. But, yeah, it's a little bit long in the tooth. And I don't know. It's interesting, but maybe it's not the type where am I going with this? I don't know.
Fair enough. All right, Greg.
Yep. So first of all, last week we touched on my ability to will things into existence.
Mm-hmm.
We've got more developments on that front. So I talked about keeping an eye out for Steel Empire, maybe, you know, might have a price drop in your region, as it did in mine. And lo and behold, for Valentine's Day, because obviously, you know, a steampunk shooter would get something tied into Valentine's Day, it's coming down to $10 in America. So thank me for that again. I think we can agree it's an indispensable part of that.
Well, it's too big to be a coincidence, I think.
Yeah. It's your iron will. I mean, where will you train this next is what I want to know.
Well, there's something I forgot to mention. A few back at the end of last year, James and I recorded with Don and Seren, and I talked about a game that had kind of, you know, was on my radar and then disappeared for a long time, the 3DS sequel to a DSiWare game, Go Go Coco Polo. And
yes.
Shortly after, I mentioned the fact that that had been kind of radio silent for a long time. Circle actually put new screenshots of it up as well. So
they did.
It's a pattern. It's also a pattern that apparently has its limits. I'll just.
It sure
it
still
that.
Exists, probably.
It's for my ability to will things my way is limited.
It does not extend to sports, for instance.
It certainly does not extend to sports.
Yes.
It's downloadable, like, you know, little video game seems to be the limit of it, but it's something. You're gonna have to really start thinking about how I structure these things from now on.
Yep, a lot of power, Greg. Great responsibility.
yeah, big time, big league. I will take it more seriously than that, anyway. But what I've been playing this week, I've spoken about it before. It's been something I've been working a lot of, sort of gradually for ages. Is SteamWorld Heist on Wii U? It's been a gradual kind of process of this. I've been enjoying it, but I find the missions are not hugely different. I mean, there is a certain amount of variety in terms of different kind of objectives, and some missions, you know, enable you to take in more characters than others, which will, you know, inevitably change how you approach it strategically. But you know, for me, it just has functioned better as something to sort of chip away at gradually over time, and I'm pretty deep into it now. I've played for about I think into double digits in terms of hours, and I mean, what I believe is the final area of the game. It's been good. I've not got a lot of experience with this sort of game. Worms was a big deal in Britain back in the day. because of its the developers and all that kind of thing. But I kind of miss that whole thing.
It was a big Amiga and Commodore game.
Yeah, yeah. So I largely missed it. I think I kind of played a little bit with a friend of mine once, like kind of mid 90s or whatever, but never had one myself and all that. So it's kind of This is pretty fresh to me, this kind of strategy game. But of course, like I guess the big draw for this is for me is kind of not obviously there's a kind of RPG elements with leveling up and unlocking new abilities and just increasing your base stats as well, and how those abilities can kind of come together and using them at the best time is good. But probably the heart of it is just making these improbable shots in a given situation. So especially when you've got the sharpshooter class weapons, which have a sight on them, which allows you to judge how it's going to ricochet off several walls and then maybe hit like an explosive barrel and then set off a whole bunch of the environment that's been sort of dripping with this explosive gel, and then take out a whole bunch of enemies at once. But, you know, similar to, I remember I talked about this with Codename Steam, you know, you've got that element of the, you know, there's an animation with the, in the case of Codenames, it'd be more the enemy that was kind of fluctuating in an animation cycle, so you had to get the timing right. In this case, you know, the hand of the character holding the gun is sort of wavering very slightly, and of course if you're doing a long distance crazy trick shot, that slight little bit of variation amounts to a huge divergence in where the bullet is actually going to end up. So, you know, getting yourself into a situation where you know you kind of need to, could really use with making this shot to make the mission go well, and then pulling it off is great fun. Certainly that's one of the most satisfying components of the game. But it is interesting how it kind of handles sort of punishing you for characters dying or aborting missions and things like that. I've been playing on the middle difficulty level, which is experienced, I believe. In that case, you can't just sort of quit a mission and retry it without paying a penalty in terms of the amount of steam you have, which in this case is the currency. You use that to buy weapons, to buy inventory slots, you know, to expand the number of items you can carry, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, if for instance a character dies during a mission, now they're not permanently dead or anything. It's not like a classic Fire Emblem, but the thing is, they will not be eligible to receive experience in that from that mission should you then go on to complete it. So a lot of the time, you know, if I lost someone, especially if it was kind of early-ish on or just through, you know, careless play, stupidity, you know, I would want to abort, but then that'll cost you. So I kind of got into a cycle of finding ways to spend money beforehand. You know, it's just like, okay, let's get some use out of this money before I probably end up wasting it on something silly, a character death that could have been avoided. So that's kind of the cycle I got into, is then, well, all right, I've spent my money, so now there really isn't a penalty for restarting very much, and I'm going to play the level until I can kind of get a strategy that works, where everybody's going to get experience and then they're going to level up and they're going to get more abilities. And that, I think it's not just that those abilities are useful in battle, I just feel like it makes the game more fun. You've got things like Kill Shot, where you can, if you kill one enemy, then it gives you another shot. You can, in fact, as a later skill, activate a situation where it will give you indefinite kill shot. You know, if you keep chaining together kills, you can keep having an extra shot, but you can only do that once per battle. So you know, it's that perfect time. It's like, okay, I've got one character, you know, I've got this character in range of about four or five different enemies, I could kill them all in one turn if I pull off some tricky shooting across a fairly big stage or something. But you can do it. So yeah, I feel like it'd be it would have been a much less enjoyable experience if I hadn't focused on leveling up the characters and having more of these abilities and then bringing in more strategic options and things like that. So, you know, that part of it's been good. And then you get more, you get earned stars, reputation stars from each level, which if you do it sort of without having any casualties, if you find your particular bits of loot in the level, like, which then opens up other parts of the overworld maps, and you know, it opens up other weapons and all this kind of stuff. So I think it's in there, so I guess you can play more casually, even on a higher difficulty level, and just kind of, you know, plow your way through. But I don't see how that would be as rewarding as it is if you really try and sort of do the mission, you really complete the missions, you know, by getting all the stars and as much experience as you can and all that kind of stuff. It really does kind of enhance it for me. And so, yeah, now towards the end, you do get these sort of phases of the game. You know, I'm on the third kind of overworld map of the game, and now you've got a very different kind of cast of enemies that are a lot like the destroyer droids from Star Wars, except their shields aren't internal. They come from, like, magical disco balls that you have to destroy.
Right.
It's a quirky game, lots of funny little touches to it. Some of the kind of loot that you can find is just worth, you know, it's valuable, but it's not like a weapon or armor or anything like that. They have some amusing kind of trinkets, like the Heisman Trophy, for instance. But which is referred to as
random.
which is referred to as depicting, like, you know, an ancient human with his young.
Oh, so weird.
They just don't, like, they don't understand, you know, it's this, you know, the earth has shattered long ago and no one really knows history anymore. And, like, you get a clothes iron, which is referred to as the earliest steam bot that had a fierce whip tail. And silly stuff. Yeah, so yeah, there's plenty of funny things about, and that's it. I mean, those items are kind of useful because basically that enables you to hold money that can't be taken away from you by aborting or failing a mission. Yeah, and then you just cash it in when you want to, provided you've got enough inventory slots, which you do have to buy. To when you actually think, okay, well, this super duper weapon like costs 9,000 or whatever, but you know, if I cash in my couple of Heismans, then I can afford it. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been enjoying it, and I have to say, in terms of the version element of it, I mean, 3DS, I'm sure, would have been good for it the way I've played it, in terms of, like, just playing little bits at a time gradually, like, that would have suited it. But I do feel, for, like I said, making some of these more elaborate shots and stuff, the screen size might have been a problem. I don't know,
I'm wondering about that. Like, is it more zoomed out on Wii U? Like, do you see further?
I'm not sure, because I haven't done a, you know, sort of side-by-side comparison, but I just kind of think, I think the biggest thing for me would be imagining it going down to 3DS, even though, you know, that's backwards into the chronology, is, you know, if I'm trying to make not a laser-sighted shot, but just a shot across, you know, a reasonable distance with, you know, a regular weapon, and, you know, I'm trying to kind of just line that up by eye, you know, where the character's arms move in. I want to make sure I get the timing right so that, you know, I might get a headshot or whatever. That seems tricky on, you know, a 3DS to me. Yeah, that seems like it would be tricky. So it may have benefited, I think, from being on Wii U. And it certainly looks nice. I mean, you know what to expect with the Image and Forms, the whole Steam World aesthetic. Although you get kind of distinct phases in the style because of these different overworld maps and stuff. But, it looks good on Wii U. I'm really happy with the playability on Wii U and all that. So it's been great. But, I guess the portability would have made it, might mean I would have got through it a little faster, but I'm still happy with how things have gone.
Cool. In 3DS, there were definitely instances where you had to kind of scroll the pan the camera to the enemy and then back to your character and, like, try to guess where you were shooting. So for that reason, mostly I was using the characters that had the sniper like laser scopes.
Yeah, the sharpshooting ability. It certainly is useful. But I do like the other characters too. I've used was it sea bass or sea brass, as you should say, a lot. He's got that sort of the whole payback thing going on. I think you can actually hurt him indirectly, and then he will do more damage to other enemy units then and stuff like that. That's what I love about the abilities, just the way you can kind of fit them together and have fun with them.
Cool. Well, John doesn't really have anything unless you want to throw something out there, John.
No, not really. I've been traveling for the past week. I got back last night. Really, my only new business is that I was up in Seattle visiting friends, and I saw Run the Jewels in concert for any rap fans out there.
Nice.
I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. They put on a great show.
Good concert. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, on that gaming news, that Run the Jewels put on a great show, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, it'll be time for some listener mail. And we are back. And it is time for listener mail. You can send us your email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Before we get into emails, I want to give a really quick plug, and I'll repeat it at the end of the show. We're going to be doing our next retroactive Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom on the 2nd. We'll be recording it on the 2nd of March, so the day before the Switch comes out. I wanted to put this out there now.
Only way to get yourself prepared.
Yep.
That's right. I want to put this out there now because if you listen to the show throughout the week, you should go ahead and get started so you can post your comments in the TalkBack thread. There. First email. I will be reading it. And it is, Delaney writes, so there seems to be quite a debate with what version of Breath of the Wild people will get. On Wii U, quote, John in the Wild is still coming out, but with a graphical downgrade. The Switch version of John's Gone Wild Miami Edition looks great, and it's portable, but you will have to buy a Switch. I myself got a pre-order for a Switch, and The Legend of Zelda Every Breath John Takes... Looking at the comparisons of the Wii U and Switch versions, it's amazing that the game started on Wii U. The lighting is very dramatically different, and the performance seems like it won't be as great on the Wii U. So my question in the end is this. Can the Wii U version and the Switch version of John's Breath Down Your Neck... That's the one. That was the one that got me. Really be compared fairly. Also, can they even be reviewed the same... Given the same score, would getting the Wii U version be a bad idea, since that version physically seems like it could be a collector's item? Excuse me. Would getting the Wii U version... No, I said it right.
Yeah, that's how it's written, but yeah, perhaps it means a good idea, because yes. It would be a collector's item.
Thanks for reading, and I'm sure we are all eager for what The Legend of Zelda Sowing John's Wild Oats will be like in the end. That one, I saw the first word, knew it was going, so I was able to save myself, but...
Yeah, I mean, all viable titles.
We can't... We can't.
I liked kind of, like, the progression from, like, it seemed like you were being stalked to, after that, you were stalking. Like, seems like you might have a problem there, but
he
then...
He was both, like, Sting and who Sting was singing about in that song.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. I was thinking Lionel Richie, but yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, I don't know. There's an uncomfortable progression of titles that I just don't really feel like going through because it reminds me of some sort of serial killer.
The fact that they start okay, and then they just get increasingly unsettling as they go.
I'm still the Miami bit. I'm not.
Well, I guess Miami is my serial killer territory. I guess. You know?
Well, I mean, you know? if you're gonna film an episode of John's Gone Wild, that's where it's gonna be. It's gonna be in like Miami or New Orleans. It's not gonna be.
It's
in gonna like...
travel all the way across the United States.
Yeah, well,
to go wild. You don't go wild on.
You're not gonna go wild in like Duluth. It's gonna be the party scene that makes you go wild, and like that's if you're gonna party, you may as well party big.
I think the title implies that he goes wild in a whole bunch of places. Miami is just one edition.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the kind of place where one would go wild. There are many places where one might go wild.
I mean, perhaps John in the Wild is maybe I just got released from prison. I'm back out in the wild, so to speak. I'm released in Miami, or maybe I move there because I have no prior criminal history there.
In Florida?
Every breath John takes, I don't know. That's usually with stalking. John's breath down your neck.
That's definitely was stalking.
Definitely stalking. And
that
then,
moves you more into like ghost territory, where it's like you feel it breathing on the back of your neck. Are you a poltergeist, John? What is happening?
I'm just imagining someone making a sort of pot around John's head.
Yeah, and then I don't know, sowing my wild oats. I mean,
that's just not necessary.
I'll leave that up to the imagination, but I have a feeling that in and of itself, film footage of that might be a collector's item as well. I don't know.
We can't read anymore.
Or just kind of a what's extortion tool?
Yeah, blackmail.
Yeah, yes.
All right. Yes. Delaney's emails are banned until Zelda comes out. Yeah.
So I'm getting the Wii U version for the simple reason that I pre-ordered it and I got a rebate on it, and it's going to be super cheap, and I'm not getting a Switch. So I don't know. Like the trick, I guess, if it looks like the Wii U version is going to look worse, is to not look at Switch footage. And then, so just
pretend,
do like me.
Yeah, Switch
pretend
version doesn't
that
exist.
This is the only version that exists and that it's great.
I like the idea of someone like shoving a Switch under your nose and going, look at it, look how much better it is. And you're like, that doesn't seem like anything to me.
Yeah. No, that's. Remember, object permanence is all in your head.
Yeah. I mean, and in terms of the collector's item thing, I mean, a collector's item maybe in 10 to 15 years, you know?
Right.
Okay, it's the GameCube thing, right? I mean, GameCube Twilight Princess ended up like not being that common. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where that kind of the line of thought comes from. And well, Wii U's less popular than GameCube was. So
yeah,
maybe,
absolutely.
You know, if they sort of allocate accordingly, it could be even more rare. But there was also the kind of thinking with Twilight Princess that the GameCube was preferable for a lot of people because it didn't have the waggle stuff. Which, I mean, in terms of like how they can be compared and reviewed and all that kind of stuff, I mean, you're just gonna have to wait and see. We don't know the full scope of like how different or they'll be yet and all that kind of stuff, but it's difficult at this stage to imagine how, in terms of the actual product, the Wii U one would be preferable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not surprising that the Wii U version it doesn't perform as well. I'm actually surprised at the visual touches that seem to be in the Switch version. I figured it would just be the same game that performs better.
Right, because were you thinking that maybe Miyamoto would impose that they don't work on the graphics and instead?
No, I was just assuming that they would that wouldn't be a big enough priority, that they would just focus on, you know, let's get the content in.
Right.
Let's make sure this game is as good as it can be, and then we'll just it will naturally perform better on this system that runs better. And I saw a video of like the draw distance and stuff being compared, and it's pretty. Now, granted, the video from the Wii U version was older, and there could be some because they've been showing the Switch version since then.
Yeah,
there could be some progress made on that front as well. But I mean that these systems do have a noticeable power difference, and so it would not be surprising. The Wii version of Twilight Princess ran better than the GameCube version, at least it's my understanding.
Well, it ran in 480p and the GameCube version didn't,
widescreen as well, wasn't it?
Of course, that's what I was referencing. Like, supposedly the team said, like, look, we can make this look better on the Wii, and Miyamoto was like, no, like, it has to look the same. But then they flipped, they mirrored the entire world and everything, and it's like, okay,
yeah,
what
just,
was the point
just,
of that?
Just yeah. To make the whole waggling seem more real.
Right,
fool's
but it just seemed like he wanted parity between the two versions, but then they went and changed things anyway. So,
yeah,
Maybe time they realized there was no point to that.
Well, also, I think perhaps the most salient point about a lack of parity in that case relative to this one is the fact that the GameCube version came out later. It was not on the same day. Mm. Whereas at least with this one, you know, you don't have like 2 weeks or whatever where it's like, oh God, you know, everybody that got a Wii is playing it, but I want to play the GameCube one, so I have to wait 2 weeks and put up with it. I mean, I guess it wasn't probably such a spoiler minefield back then because it was, you know, the internet was not what it is now and social media and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, had they done that again, I think that might have been more influential with people's decision making than you know, some of these sort of little visual components or whatever else.
They could have been the ultimate monsters and just gone like, well, you know, this is a Switch game now. So the fact that the Wii U version exists is...
And it's coming the same day.
It's kind of a blessing.
Yeah, I think that shows some sort of sense of responsibility, honoring a commitment that was made to Wii U owners years ago.
Right,
you began with that far-flung, you know, sort of January direct promise back in 2013.
Back when they announced the Wind Waker remake.
Yeah, so, and we're also working on an exclusive Zelda for this platform, and basically can't tell you anything about it at this point, but it's going to play with, like, non-linearity, basically.
Right.
That was about it.
Because that may be all they had.
Yeah, because it was just starting.
Because, I mean, for the long-term viability of Switch, like, if this game didn't exist on Wii U, then that might not be a bad thing. Like, oh, if you want to play New Zelda, you got to buy a Switch. Now, granted, most people who own a Wii U and would be hellbent on playing Zelda are likely the kind of people who are going to buy a Switch anyway.
Yeah, because it's a pretty small sliver.
Right.
You know, cause it's just 13.5 million, I think, is pretty much what it stopped at.
But having an exclusive, a literal exclusive of that magnitude is a big deal, and they said, no, we just need to come out on Wii U. They probably will produce a decent number of the Wii U version, though, because there's only so many Switches out there at launch day.
Well, yeah, obviously they've talked about, you know, 2 million by the end of the month, basically, because that's the end of the fiscal year.
And they've talked about increasing their shipments, too.
Yeah, because of the you know, sort of early interest has been good, so you know but maybe could increase, or you know the number that they've got in mind for subsequent months at least could increase. But yeah, I think that's one of the interesting parts though that we haven't talked about so much of because you know they've I think they've done a pretty excellent job of kind of building this game up. Obviously, we kind of came at the expense of just about everything else at last year's E3. But I mean, obviously, the trailer at the end of the Switch presentation was really well put together, excellent stuff and all that. But I guess it's interesting to talk about the possibility. How damaging is it if this Zelda does not meet the high expectations that the series commands and that they've sort of cultivated with the hype machine on this thing for the past year?
I mean, it certainly wouldn't be the first game that's gotten this kind of a hype machine going to be a major, to be a letdown. And I think this game will be judged more harshly as a consequence of the hype machine.
Yeah, especially now with the types of games that are out on the market, especially open world games. I mean, the open world games, there's a ton of them out there, you know? So it's not like the question is not can they do an open world game, it's can they do an open world game that can match the top of the genre.
Yeah.
And still feel, have that kind of Zelda feel to it.
Yeah, I think there's obviously some risk here in blowback if this game doesn't deliver on everyone's fantasies, no matter how reasonable they may be. but at the same time, this is one of those risk reward things. There will be people who even if this game comes out and wins a bunch of Game of the Year awards and whatever, what have you, there will be people who do not like this game because it is not the Zelda of their this is my Zelda.
They're sort of strange. And that's the thing, the franchise is so big now, you've had a bunch of different sort of strains over the years of that have emphasized different components of the gameplay or different kinds of storytelling or whatever. And people have their preferences, and this can't be all of those things, really. I know they're kind of touting its open-endedness, but even that in itself is something that's not, may not conform with what everybody likes from Zelda. There's no doubt there'll be people that won't, won't be one of their favourite games in the series or whatever. But it's just interesting because a lot of people are buying Switch early to play it on that system. They think it'll look better. They like the portability, whatever it might be. With the pedigree of the franchise and the trailers and all that, they're already willing to put the money down to do it. So it's like, well, those sales are made, right? But I guess the question is, how, given the fact there's so few other launch titles, and obviously they're kind of pacing it out, with Mario Kart the next month and all that kind of stuff, they're trying to aim for rather, because there was, wasn't there like 30 on Wii U or something ridiculous? Like there actually were a lot of games.
There were quite a lot of games, but a lot of them were ports.
Yeah, ports from third parties and things like that. In this case, they're limiting the number of games straight away and then presumably trying to have a more consistent flow after that, both from themselves and third parties. But Zelda is clearly, the flag bearer. It has a lot of weight on its shoulders. I think for the word of mouth component, it's going to matter a lot if these people, that have already decided to put the money down and buy a new system to play this in the what appears to be, as Delaney kind of points out, the most beautiful and most full kind of way that you can play this game, even though there are other ways. If they are not kind of effusive in their praise and all that kind of stuff, talking about it on social media or whatever, how much that hurts the system or not? It's an interesting question because I feel like we've sort of been so caught up in the system and the launch and the price and all this stuff. There's the kind of like, well, Zelda's big, it's huge, yeah, but it's not a given that it's going to be like the best thing ever by any means.
Yeah, I remember when the Wii came out. I remember a guy I used to work with. He bought it. He wasn't really a big Nintendo guy, but he thought it looked cool. And he wanted to play Twilight Princess, and he played through Twilight Princess, and then he was like, I went to play another game like it or find another game like it, and there just wasn't another game like it to move on to. And he eventually wound up abandoning the Wii pretty much entirely, and he actually started playing like Mass Effect on 360 because that was the kind of game that he wanted to play, and there was nothing else like that on Wii. So
yeah,
it's really important for them to keep kind of following it up with meaty games, not just...
So, no, I guess if you're concerned about that sort of thing, it might have been helpful to have the Skyrim port sooner.
Yeah, perhaps. Exactly. Yep.
There's an interesting idea of what if, how will this game be received? Especially talking about how what is your Zelda? And I would point to Metal Gear Solid 5, where the series went open world there, but if you played what was the PSP game called? Not Portable Ops, the other one.
Peace Walker.
Yeah, if you played Peace Walker, like, you saw all these things coming. Because a lot of the stuff in Peace Walker was basically practice for Metal Gear Solid 5.
All the stuff with your base. Building up your guys. That's interesting. I haven't played Metal Gear Solid 5 yet. I have played Peace Walker, but...
A lot of that stuff shows up in there. And the mission structure and stuff versus it being just a continuous... arc through one area to the next. But there are people who, Metal Gear Solid 5 won a lot of Game of the Year awards. But there are Metal Gear Solid fans who hate that game because it's not my Metal Gear.
Yeah.
So I think this game will inevitably get some of that. Looking at what is actually coming out for Switch right now that we know about. Yeah, there is a risk of there's not big giant title until Mario.
Mm-hmm.
But it's entirely possible that we see, we're getting reports basically every day of, this indie game title, this other game is coming to Switch. And we're hearing there was an interview with, what was the game, the snake, Snake, shoot, I'm blanking what the game's called now.
Snake Pass, is that?
Yeah, yeah. Where basically they said, like, hey, just so you know, there's a lot of these coming soon that you're going to hear about. And GDC is what, like in 2 weeks?
Right.
So we may hear about more stuff coming in the interim before these larger things. But it would be good if there was just like one meaty game between now and Mario.
I mean, I'm not, in that sense, I'm less concerned in Japan. I think Splatoon 2 will be massive there, or certainly has the potential to be, when you look at how impressively it sold on Wii U when it was hamstrung by, you know, that system not being popular at all there. That could be very, very big. And it's certainly, for me personally, that's something I'm looking forward to a lot, because the main thing that limited me from playing that more was not having off-TV play. And of course, now it will, because it has to. So, yeah, that's pretty exciting for me. But yeah, will it be able to be that big elsewhere? We're not sure. So yeah, it's kind of a concern. I imagine there'll be other announcements as well, to fill in to some extent. But yeah, you kind of feel like when you put so much pressure on this one game, it better deliver. You know what I mean? Like, I guess perhaps they're very confident in it, and perhaps they have every reason to be very confident in it. But it does feel that way.
But if a system has a big launch game, and there are systems that have launched without one, including
systems. No, I mean, launches are often kind of like tepid, to say
Ridge
the least.
Ridge Racer.
Well, I mean, look at the Wii U. I mean, Christ, it launched with Nintendo Land.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think Nintendo Land and New Super Mario Bros. U are games that I think are pretty damn good, but they're just not, they're not like the sort of sexiest or kind of, you know, the kind of games that are going to get people kind of overflowing with praise online or kind of get real buzz going. I don't think that's the thing. I mean, I think they might have felt that Nintendo Land could do that because a bit like this 1-2 Switch stuff, it says, oh, you know, you'll get friends over and you'll try it out and they'll think it's fun or whatever. But you know, evidently, in that sense, it didn't do what Wii Sports did, even though, like, from my point of view, I kind of feel like it's a more enjoyable and substantial package as a video game, Nintendo Land. But it just didn't have that, you know, spark or something to really catch fire the way that Wii Sports did. And presumably, they're hoping that something like 1-2 Switch can, but...
So, I mean, we do have things like Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2 coming out at or near launch, at least in Japan. You know, we've got there's stuff out there. I think it's going to be interesting to see which things get the push. You know, I'm looking at a list of announced games, and this is the list that I usually go to when I'm having this conversation or when I'm talking about what's going to come out.
I suppose with the Splatoon point and Dragon Quest series in Japan, I mean, I'm much less worried about this in Japan in general.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Kart's in April.
Not that its success in Japan is guaranteed by any means, but I feel a lot better about it in Japan than else. It's elsewhere where I feel like Zelda has more, you know, to do, is more important. It was the focus of the Super Bowl ad they just did.
Yeah.
All this, you know, it's, and considering, you know, we've talked about the fact that Zelda has not necessarily been, you know, like one of Nintendo's sort of best performing series for a little while. It's had some kind of ups and downs commercially and all that. It is going to be really quite fascinating to see if it could carry that load. Because, you know, like I said, I mean, Mario Kart is kind of like the game that's, that was the game that had an absolutely absurd attach rate on Wii U.
Yeah.
But how much that can sort of go beyond that with this deluxe version is another sort of debate.
So I don't know how, you know, this Zelda is going to go down in history, but I think it's going to have kind of a grace period towards the beginning, you know, because it does seem to be everything that I've seen people on message boards clamoring for, you know, something that's more like Ocarina of Time, and that what that game evoked, you know, the feeling of being able to go anywhere, like this huge overworld, which was not huge in Ocarina of Time, but this time it's huge, you know, even by today's standards. And people have been asking, and you know, some people, but they're vocal, like, have been asking for voice acting. This is getting it. Like, they've wanted, you know, story and more interesting characters. And, like, I haven't followed the hype machine around the Zelda, but it sounds like they're trying to deliver that. So, I don't know. This, to me, like, this Zelda seems to be trying to tick off all the boxes for this image of the lapsed Zelda fan since Ocarina of Time, all the features that they've been asking for. So, I don't know.
It's a good deal of fan service, I think.
Yeah.
And a game like this, as long as it works well, it's not the immediate, like, oh, this is got problems. It's usually like, oh, I'm 27 hours in and it's dragging. There's not enough to do. It's dull. You know, Xenoblade Chronicles X really lived by the fact that that Mira was so amazing to be around in, because otherwise the game would be quite dull a lot of the time, because you're just walking around.
But you mentioned Metal Gear Solid 5, and I think that Breath of the Wild seems to be closer to that, because it's less afraid to be playful with its controls and gameplay mechanics, you know, like in Metal Gear Solid 5,
totally.
You could slide down in your cardboard box, and so, you know, like, here you've got you can snowboard and the shield, and you've got the wing thing.
That's all mechanics.
I mean, Mira had no mechanics, you know. It had flying 80 hours into the game.
This is not true. It had bunny hill jump climbing, where you just jumped your way up mountains. But
sure,
that's a key skill you had to learn.
But yeah, I mean, there was a sandbox, but not a playpen. Like, it didn't really let you do anything.
But it succeeds, and I think in some ways, Metal Gear Solid 5 fails, even though there's more stuff you can do in Metal Gear Solid 5, because Mira is so much more interesting than the deserts of Afghanistan. There's just like there. It's
sick
basic
burn.
Yeah. Well. It's, yes.
Take that, Afghanistan.
Yeah.
those people have suffered enough, Guillaume. But like, actually, just going around. Like, I never wanted to just wander around. Or when it was set, the part that's in Africa, I never just wanted to wander around. I just basically was like, here's where I need to go. Here's what's in the way. Do I want to do a beeline, or do I want to just bypass this other thing? Okay, let's get D-Horse here so I can ride there. Or let's just get back in the helicopter and fly there. Versus Xenoblade, where it was like, okay, I need to go here, and I'll get there eventually. And I would just kind of wander.
But could you make your mech poop on command?
Probably. There's probably a part for that. There's a lot of parts for the mechs. But, you know, I think that's the big thing. Like, what's the hook to keep this game going? And that's what a lot of open world games struggle with. But to your point, there'll be a grace period because people won't know that the hook's not there until they've played it for a while.
Right, and I think that at the beginning, for a while, people might be quite happy to just climb up a mountain and look down the mountain and say, yep, I climbed that mountain.
I climbed the shit out of that mountain.
Yeah, or throw a bomb down into a bunch of bombs and watch them all blow up.
Right.
Yes. But we've been on this email for quite a bit.
We have.
Let's do the next email.
Sure. Brian writes, hey guys, since the Wii U had such a short life cycle with a limited library, it is one system that I might actually be able to complete my backlog on. What game is on the top of your guys' backlog for the Wii U? Mine is Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which I played less than halfway through. I wasn't thrilled with the inability to play on the TV given the neat and detailed clay aesthetics, but I did enjoy the gameplay and intend to finish it. Thanks again, guys, for all the great work week after week.
Pikmin 3. I've actually owned it for a while. I've just never gotten around to playing it. It's, you know, it's that and Star Fox. Oh, what's the guard, which...
Oh, you're not required. Like, that's
I
not
think
really
I'll eternally pass on Star
backlog.
Fox Guard, to be honest.
I still haven't really... I tried to get into it while trying to keep like a little nephew busy, and that was a bad idea. Anyway, so I haven't touched it again. You
it's
know?
Still in the cellophane.
I've got about half the way through Star Fox Guard with a friend doing the spotting. The bosses were quite cool, and it certainly is amusing when once shit goes off, especially if you miss one of those nuisance bots and like one of your most critical cameras from like in the interior of the base you're protecting gets taken away or disabled or whatever. Shit. But it's obviously it's not a big deal. But for me, I haven't got a big backlog with it. A lot of the stuff I've got, I have played. But I'd definitely like to play more of Fast, the racer game, because what I played of it was pretty cool, but I haven't really got all the way into it. Although, of course, that's getting on a sort of special edition, enhanced version for Switch as well. But the one I really haven't touched that I don't know how I haven't got around to it when I bought it on sale was Guacamelee. Because that sort of game is something I've enjoyed a fair bit on Wii U, so I haven't got around to it. So that's got to be the top one, but there's not much else besides that, I don't think.
I do have a lot of downloadable games that for some reason I just kept adding to my backlog, and I guess on top of the list should be Elliot's Quest,
that's coming to 3DS, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons why I feel stupid for buying in advance, like to stock up on games and indie games especially.
Yeah, I try and avoid that because it will happen. Something will come along to make you feel silly.
Well, there are a few things that make you feel dumber than buying something on sale and knowing that you won't be able to get to it right away, and then like the next year it's even more discounted and you're like, yeah, I still haven't touched that, what an idiot. And then it gets announced ported to new consoles and you're like, wow, that would be way more exciting to play on the Switch, but damn it.
Yeah, you're not going to double dip on a game that you've literally ignored for like a year.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I would feel like I would feel like such a chump. So I won't do it.
Yeah, for me it's Super Mario 3D World. I still gotta finish that guy off. It's top of the backlog.
James and John, you got really good games on your backlog. You should play those.
Yeah, I need to go back to it.
Yeah, but
it's
I
just
can't.
Too many games.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where like I'll get to it.
Yeah,
and it's I don't keep a deep backlog. My backlog's only three or four games right now.
Right.
John, do you want to weigh in it?
Yeah, John, how deep is your backlog, buddy?
It's deep, man. I mean,
yeah, that's the thing. Well, when he talks about tub time, it isn't water that's in there. It's just all the games he hasn't opened.
Yeah, I'm just swimming in them like
Scrooge McDuck.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, and Switch is not going to help that either, because you know, once Breath of the Wild comes out. That's going to put everything on hold, and who knows after that, I might get Mario Kart. I mean, that'll be hard to resist. I mean, and there's other stuff too. There's other kind of like random stuff that I just happen to kind of pick up along the way, like stray puppies. Like, hey, Uncharted 4, come here, little buddy. Come on board. Go into my backlog. So it's sitting
I'll
there.
I'll see you in 8 years.
Yeah.
When you're on PS5.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I played like an hour of that, and it's just sitting there waiting for me to go back to it at some point. But yeah, there's always something, man. And the thing is, this is actually me actually have trying to curb the games that I buy. Like, curb it.
Right.
Because the backlog is huge. But the thing is, the problem is now, you know, you can get games so cheap.
Oh my God, yeah.
Not long after they release. It's like, I mean... Even games that have been out for maybe 6 to 8 months, it's like, hey, you can get that game for $15. It's like, eh. You know? So
I guess I have to.
I guess I gotta.
That's right. Well, if I don't buy it, who will?
Yeah.
John single-handedly buttressing the game.
You know, what can I say? I'm trying to save the world over here, you know? It's capitalism. It's like, I mean, a perfect example is Shadow of Mordor, right?
Yes.
So I bought that game on PS4 for some ludicrously cheap price, like, I don't know, $14 or something.
That's
like
what
that.
I paid for it, yeah.
Yeah, so, but then it was on sale, so, but I got the physical copy. Well, I think like over like some Black Friday sale or something like that, you could get the download code for $10. So I was
but
like,
you already
fuck
have
it.
The game.
I do, but see, I can flip it. I can probably flip it on eBay. Maybe I can't. I'm just a moron. But I was like, all right, I was like, theoretically, I could get this. I could get the physical copy out of my house. I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just saying, don't judge me.
What are you exercising out of this house? Power of Christ compels you, Shadow of Mordor.
I'm not doing the Johnny Metz, you know, full download only thing. It's just not my bag, but I try. I do try.
I think the full download thing only really is only good at like ameliorating the guilt of having a deep backlog because you can just ignore it. You can just put
there
it
is
in the
yeah, it's yeah, it's like, physically it's like piling up.
Yeah.
All right. Next email.
Yep.
Greg.
Leo writes, crew, I'm in an emotional hesitancy.
Oh no.
Heck, it's beyond the hesitancy. I'm completely locked up. I pre-ordered the Nintendo Switch because I can't describe my excitement about taking console games like Breath of the Wild and Xenoblade 2 on the go with me. But it seems to have killed my desires to purchase Wii U and 3DS content. There's still several things I'd like to buy on both systems. Hyrule Warriors DLC, Rhythm Heaven Megamix, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Fire Emblem Fates Revelation, plus various VC games. But I can't bring myself to buy any of it. It's like every time I consider a Wii U purchase, I think I'll never be able to take it on the go. And every time I consider a 3DS purchase, I think, will I want to take my 3DS anywhere after March 3rd? I never felt this way with other systems. In fact, I bought a few Wii discs after I already had my Wii U. I'm not sure if these feelings are happening because Switch is a hybrid or because it's not backwards compatible. But I'm wondering if any of you guys are having similar feelings.
Well, the way that the industry works now, where indies and AAA developers alike are just keep re-releasing their games, I think it makes sense to just wait a little and see.
Yeah.
Because I got my PlayStation 2 really late in that console's life, and then I started stocking up on, like, I don't know, like Onimusha and Final Fantasy and stuff like that. And then all the games that I stocked up on ended up having some sort of like HD collection on the PlayStation 3. So again, I felt like a chump.
Even though obviously backwards compatibility kind of went away with PS3. So with Switch, you've got that situation as well. But yeah, that's the thing. It seems to just incentivize companies to then come forward with re-releases a lot of the time.
Right. But yeah, no, I think it makes sense to be thinking about, well, like, I'm going to be plugging a console in my television, and I've only got finite space, on that stand, and do I want to keep my Wii U plugged in? Like, do I want to invest in advance and on games and kind of like, will I have the time? Like, will I have the desire and the time to even go back to the Wii U? Like, I think those are healthy questions to ask yourself.
Yeah, I agree. It's something I've started thinking a bit like that in respect of, back to the previous question, there are a certain amount of games on Wii U that I haven't got the sort of full use out of yet. There's a bit of a backlog there. And then, you know, it's like, do you want to add to that potentially when it feels like the end is so near in sight, you know, like the clock is really kind of ticking to a point where it's like, well, is it going to stay hooked up to the TV? Yeah, will it justify being hooked up to the TV when I'm kind of cramming for HDMI ports as it is? Obviously, Wii U has the advantage that you don't necessarily have to have it hooked up to the TV to play it with some games, but which goes in its favor, but still,
Yeah, it's started to happen where, especially for certain kinds of, like some of the VC games, Ogre Battle 64 just came out over here.
For some reason, yeah. Cause,
yeah. And, you know, obviously we did the retroactive on that years ago, playing the Wii, I was playing the Wii Virtual Console release of that. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that, we played it a lot for the retroactive at the time, but it's the kind of thing that I feel would be enhanced for me being able to do it portably off TV, whatever. You know, be able to put more time into it. You know, as James mentioned before, it's kind of a certain amount of like waiting. It's kind of it seems like a suitable game for when you're kind of half doing something else at the same time.
Right.
So I could imagine myself putting way more time in that, either on Wii U or on the portable. But now, it's like, well, do I want to, you know, kind of upgrade it on Wii U when, you know, how much you're doing it for the convenience, but it's like, well, how convenient is the Wii U going to be in general now? Because right, pretty soon you might not even particularly want it hooked up to the TV or anything like that. And then it's like, well, at some point we might get N64 games on Switch and then it'd be even more portable. It's kind of, yeah, the thinking has started. You know, I think there's still a case to be made for buying stuff on Wii. Of course, it depends on, you know, your situation, your entertainment center, or all these other things about the practicalities and conveniences and stuff. But yeah, it's really started to kind of factor into what I'm thinking. And I mean, it kind of seems like in Japan anyway, Nintendo of you know, acting as if they expect that from people, because they haven't released anything on Wii U Virtual Console for a while there. We're still getting releases because we, you know, haven't got them at the same pace that they have done in Japan, but
right,
I think it's been desolate since like certainly I think the end of last year.
Yeah, it's definitely been way down, but like as you said, we're still playing catch up, and of course we never will, but
not all together. I mean, like, they've got all the... Didn't they just have a big Final Fantasy sale for the anniversary?
Yeah, I think so.
With, like, loads of... Yeah, you know, because they've got all those, you know, on Wii U to discount and stuff, whereas, like, we've only ever got Tactics Advance. I think that's about it.
I mean, you know, we all have. We all have times of doubt, you know?
When we lose faith.
But my advice for Leo here, you know, because he sounds like sounds like he needs some counsel from somebody with experience with just this kind of
Jesus,
just this kind of emotional faltering. You know what I'm saying? And my advice is YOLO. Just buy it all. Buy everything. You know what? You buy it. You buy it to your heart's content. You buy it on 3DS.
My
you buy it on Wii U.
You buy it.
And damn it, if it comes out again on Switch, then you just buy it again. You know what? Because right, you deserve it. You make yourself happy. Did you play
Sonic Boom? No? Go get it.
Yep.
What about Fire and Ice? That's on 3DS. Go get that too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Whatever makes you happy. You know what? You could die tomorrow, Leo. Think about it.
You could die tomorrow. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. We can all die tomorrow.
All right.
The odds are pretty high, actually. So, yeah, my
advice
my...
like that is guaranteed.
All of a sudden, things got dark.
My advice would be to just, don't feel pressured into buying anything. Like, the thing is, my advice would be don't look for the sales prices. Just buy what you feel like you can play right now, because then... Yeah, like, you'll be able to play it, and then you'll be able to put the console away, and, like, if you start accumulating because of low prices, like, you're just going to end up with a bunch of discs that you don't need. Yeah. And the thing is, like, some
poppycock
titles like Tokyo Mirage Sessions are becoming rare, but as we've talked about extensively on this podcast, the disc version of TMS is not the one that you want. You want the downloadable version, and that's not going to go up in prices. So you can sit on that for as long as you want. You don't have to buy it right now. Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix, that's not even available as a cartridge. So you've got forever to get it, you know. Art Warriors DLC, that's again, it's
no, material. I mean, that is, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, because it talks about not feeling this way in previous cycles, but, you know, in previous cycles, you didn't necessarily have this whole library available digitally that kind of gave mm-hmm. you that you know, sort of backstop in terms of, like, well, it's not just going to become like gold dust and then, you know, you'd have to pay some obscene price on the secondary market for it. You know, right. So, in that case, you don't feel, you know, like you have to buy stuff right now. It's still there. I assume if they were going to, like, take the eShop down eventually, there'd be plenty of notice on that. And let's not forget the Wii Shop channel is still up, despite everything else about the Wii Online being kind of shut down.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I would say is that these games aren't inherently going to not be fun because Switch is coming. You know, you've got less than a month now, but you've still got time to play a game and enjoy it. And once you've beaten Zelda,
you might be happy to have some Wii U games to play.
Right. Or a 3DS game or something.
But yeah. The games also look good on the shelf. Just remember that.
They do. You know, no, but, you know, they do, John. You're right.
As I've said before, Wii U, great box art this generation. Yep. You've got that. It really is very, very nice looking.
Mm-hmm. Spines, not so much. But
yeah, it's true. I never really liked the blue, the blue thing, at the top and the spines, but they made all the cover art go with it so nicely. You know, it made you know, like Pikmin and Wonderful 101 and all this stuff, just like, yeah, they it made
Tokyo
them,
Mirage Sessions looks great.
Yeah, it's just all this really vibrant color boxes that you don't really expect for like every game, I guess that'll be quite, you can tell, like, for whatever reason, Europe with Breath of the Wild has chosen what was clearly the Wii U box art because it's got a blue sky, whereas Japan and North America have the sort of golden sunset sky Breath of the Wild box art with links back to the camera, as it were. So yeah, I don't know why that's happened, but it's the same for Switch and Wii U in different ones in different territories.
Yeah, I mean. I would say the only thing that worries me about waiting is that Wii U and Wii U games may disappear from the shelves soon.
Yeah, it has been such a bomb that they will get sort of killed off, like perhaps more unceremoniously, certain aspects of it than previous Nintendo hardware.
So if there's a game that you know you're going to want to play, and you're okay with the possibility that maybe a Switch version comes out at a later date, then go ahead and pick it up, especially if you see that's just out there. And I'll give you a great example. Tokyo Mirage Sessions. I would say you can pretty confidently buy that game right now because it bombed in every region. And the likelihood of them... I mean, it bombed by Wii U standards.
yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know what they expected it to do in North America. The fact that they just translated and left the voice acting alone, maybe they didn't expect a whole lot of it. So maybe it met their goals. But I know in Japan, it was not a big success. So that this is probably the last ride for that game. But you can buy it and play it later, like after Zelda, or you could buy it after Zelda. But it's a really fun game. Like, it's a really fun game, and it's worth playing. So, you know, I would recommend it, even though Switch is coming out in 3 or 4 weeks.
But as I pointed out, like, the load times are so much better on the digital version. Like,
they are. I'm just using that as an example of a game that you probably don't need to worry about it right. not being around. Or rather, about a Switch version coming out, because there probably won't be one. But even if there is, you know, what would they add to that game? More side quests? Who cares? Like, that game is complete. It does not need more quests. So just think of it as a game. Don't think of it as like, oh, this is for the past. This is for your fun. Don't sweat.
Well, I think one interesting question you got to consider is how quickly they'll move to shut down the online play with Wii U.
I don't know.
I mean, because you got to think,
you know, especially this whole push to get paid online on Switch, and we're going to have Mario Kart in April and Splatoon 2 in the summer and all that. You feel they might want to turn the screw a little bit and kind of encourage you to possibly Smash Brothers has been discussed as another, you know, maybe not this year, who knows, but you know, a version of that game. Where they would do sort of essentially kind of force people to kind of graduate over rather than you know, keep, give them one less reason to keep that system hooked up and playing if the online goes away.
Yeah, so that's actually a really good point. So yeah, maybe get on some of those online games now and then think about the others later. Obviously, you can pass on Mario Kart and Splatoon, but. Shit, what other games would he be picking up then?
Mario Maker is an interesting sort of
case.
Yeah,
that's true. We
kind of expect that to hit Switch in some regards, but I guess you know, there would be differences and stuff like that. And you know, but I mean, there's a hell of a lot of levels to be enjoyed in that game right now. Although you can enjoy them to some extent with the 3DS version, right? Like, you know, you can't share levels online, but you can play levels that don't break the 3DS version through it as well. So there's that. But
yeah.
It's just with Wii U being such a kind of disappointment for them. I don't see them keeping anything running with that longer than they feel they need to.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for listener mail this week. As always, you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, where you can ask us all about your deep psychological issues with buying Wii U games. John is here to be your grief counselor and devil's advocate.
I buy them all. You can't counsel on it if you don't go through it. Remember that.
Tell us all about your consumer angst.
Take your copies of Star Fox, all 36 of them, put them in a 32-gallon Ziploc bag, and get in the bathtub with them. Remember,
early and often.
I'm trying to imagine somebody getting back in line. Like, they take the little pre-order tag, they buy the pre-order, they immediately go back and pick up another tag and get right back in line.
Hey, works for Skyrim.
And on that, I need to get out of this episode. So, as a reminder, we will be doing our retroactive for Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom on the 2nd of March, meaning you need to get your comments in soon. Which means our first episode post-Switch launch is going to sound really weird, but that's okay. Everybody wants to talk about NES-era exploration games starring vegetables.
Sure. Now come talk about Percy with us.
Come talk about Percy with us. All right, you can send us all of your emails and all of your comments to the inbox, and you can also send us recommendations for music to end the show. Greg, what do we have this week?
We have a request from Ben. He wanted something from Dragon Quest VIII, which just got the review went up on NWR. If anybody wants to check that out, Zach reviewed that along with Second Opinion from Neil. Big fans of the game, obviously. Soundtrack is an interesting case because the sort of orchestral symphonic version was added for the localized version of the PS2 game and then subtracted for the localized version of the 3DS game because presumably because they were penny pinching on the size of the car, the costs of the manufacturer of it,
probably.
But, a bit of a shame that. So I thought going along, working off Ben's request, I thought we'd actually have one of the symphonic versions of a song from DQ8. So this is the theme for the Moonshadow Land, which is one of a number of songs that Ben suggested, but I thought it was very nice. So I hope everyone enjoys it.
All right, on that, it's time to end the show. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
before we get into emails, I want to give a really quick plug, and I'll repeat it at the end of the show. We are going to be doing our next new business, which is Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom.
What the fuck?
I hate this. I hate this show. We are going to be doing our next retroactive, which is Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom, and I'm going to edit that down so nobody can tell that anything happened.
I think it's actually our next now playing.
We're going to do our next new podcast.
It is the podcast, people.
We're going to do our next new outtake, our next new stinger. I was trying to remember what day we were recording. We're recording on the 3rd. We're going to be recording this on the 2nd.
The 2nd, yes.
Yes.